Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, 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 hello. It is the one and only in the world, Dr. Shawande Mustakeem, coming to you live and direct from St. Louis, Missouri. What in the show me state? The article grows. That's where we're coming. That's where we're rounding the corner, and we're coming on over to the article grows, where any and all articles of interest that can take us to the future, take us to the past, take us wherever that we can go to understand depth and to go deep and deeper. We're going to go to the article grove. And today we're going to be talking about this article by yours truly entitled Armed with a Knife in Her Bosom, Gender, Violence, and the Carceral Consequences of Rage in the Late 19th Century. This article was published in the oldest Black History Journal in the world, known as the Journal of African American History. It was formerly known as the Journal of Negro History and founded by the father of Black history, Professor Carter G. Woodson. So we're taking us to the past, and we're going back in time to Kansas City, Missouri, where a 19-year-old black woman named Effie Jackson was left for dead in the middle of an alleyway, stabbed multiple times, and again left for dead. That's where the story not only begins, but where another beginning would emerge. But I want to pull it back, and I want to tell you how I even came to the story itself. So essentially, you have a murder that happens in 1891, and a black woman is murdered. Again, her name is Effie Jackson. Why she's murdered can transcend time and space, where we all know that jealousy can get the better part of some people. And that's what happened one particular evening. While that's not the first time, but one particular evening became a fatal encounter for this woman, Effie, and in fact a fatal encounter that would happen among three young African Americans that lived in Kansas City, Missouri at the time. But again, sort of backing it up to tell you about, again, you have a story of love and murder and all the enticing things in that moment. But this is the beginning of my next project, which is looking at, again, sort of looking at the underworld of the human experience and essentially how far people can go to express what it is that they're feeling in the moment that can have long-term consequences. And I did not expect to write this article. I did not expect to start thinking in these new ways of essentially land-based narratives. Because, as you see in the description, I am an award-winning author of The One and Only in the World, Slavery at Sea, Terror, Sex, and Sickness in the Middle Passage, published by the University of Illinois Press in 2016. Again, two-time award-winning. But going back to the article, bro, because that's where we are right now. We're really trying to move through and understand what happened. But how did you get to it? And so as we find other authors in the future, those are basic questions that we want to get at. What is it about? What's the takeaway? How did you come to it? Where can we find more? And yet, what else is to come? So I was showing my student, a former student who now is a professor, Dr. Lauren Henley, showing her how to be in the archives, because with rigor, that's what comes, is going to the archives and digging up the past and really looking at primary sources. And I uncovered just a simple demographic sheet about that there was a black woman who was accused of murder. And that was about it. Well, there was more, but she was one of other people that I just sort of found interesting at this particular archive. And I went back, thought about it, a little bit more time went by, and I just started being drawn to other archival sources. And one day I was getting ready to go somewhere. I got in the car, and I thought to myself, something in this car doesn't feel right. And then my mind began to move through, and I was like, there's somebody in this car that is at least 100, at least from another century by far, but I knew they had to have lived at least 100 or more years before, because all of a sudden, I could smell what it was very familiar to me, but I knew in that moment that I had smelled a black woman from another time. And so I called a psychic and a shaman that I know and I trust very closely, who is helping me as I'm awakening to my own gifts. And he said, do you know a Effie Jackson? And I thought to myself, how did he know? And I said, well, I mean, I just uncovered something about her in the archive like a month ago. He was like, well, that's her sitting in your car. And then he also went on to say, he was sort of, you know, playing the role of the medium for me and letting me know that she wanted me to tell her story. And I thought to myself, that's not what I do, so good luck with that. Because, hey, I'm an 18th century scholar. I study the 18th century. Kind of rare in what I do. But nonetheless, I had no idea what Missouri was about or how or if I was going to find anything on this Black woman's murder. Well, 6 months later, I would not only find a article and some articles, I would uncover 55 newspaper articles across the country about this woman's murder. And that would change the trajectory of my future work. So here it is that you have a murder victim from 1891 that would show up in my car, of whom I could detect by smell. So now we're getting into the paranormal. We're getting into the supernatural that most time never really comes up in academic conversations because we don't think to ask that, because we don't think nor really expect to have an academic who could also be a psychic and a medium. And yours truly is. So now getting back to the rigor at hand and the scholarship, because again, when this article came out, when you go read it, you'll see that there is not any aspects of the supernatural in there, but it is now walking in my truth and telling people about, well, if you ever stop to ask me how I came to that, then the story can deepen in these very interesting ways. So over the course of those 6 months of me finding those articles, not only was Effie coming around, but also her murderer, Amanda Umbel, and then the cheating boyfriend who was at the center of the entire triangle, and his name is William Jackson, of no relation to Effie Jackson. Now, that said, I was unaware, because again, here it is that I'm an academic. We're not even supposed to show emotion when we write about these painful and horrendous moments in history. So, yeah, you got to keep it scholarly. You can't be talking about the supernatural. Well, guess what? Now I can. Get over it. So, because that's even more interesting, because then opens up a new conversation. Why are all the ghosts white? Why are all the mediums and the psychics white? But that conversation will be directed on the other side of my brain in the future with the Cosmic Doc. And you can find that on the other part of my brain in the other platform, the Cosmic Doc Radio. Now, back to Dr. Musa King. What is really interesting about this story is that you would have Amanda Umbel, who is at the real crux of the story, because when I put all this together, I thought I was going to be writing it from Effie's, like, centering Effie. And Effie is centered in it, but she's the touch point for me to really kind of explain or allow other people to really understand Missouri through Amanda's eyes in another way. Because as a result of Effie's murder, of which Amanda would not only instigate, but in many ways it was premeditated. Because here it is, you have two Black women that essentially are fighting over a young Black man who's a saloon. He works, he's a porter at a saloon. This is William. And it's like he's been dating Amanda Umbel, because when she moved from Sedalia to Kansas City, within the course of a couple of years, she met William, and they started carrying on a relationship of some sort. However, that was broadly defined, or at least among the two of them. But that didn't mean that he wasn't interested or not pursuing other women, because Effie Jackson, who's 19 years old, maybe within the past year, or within that year, her family had moved from Kentucky, and she lived there and had worked in she was domestic, and so she worked in she had an apartment and everything, and was a laundress, and, doing some different domestic work, but Amanda would show up outside her house and threaten her, and then Effie would also show up actually outside of a bar and threaten Amanda. And, I mean, you got cussing and fussing and fighting, and don't you go after my man, and you better not ever come back. All this kind of stuff that sounds like it's on a Jerry Springer show. Nope, nope, nope. Again, we're talking about 1891 in Kansas City, Missouri. Good old heartland. excuse me. And so Amanda had gone out one night looking for William. She went to his house. He wasn't there. She asked around. Some people were like, oh, I think he's at work. But she went home, got all dolled up, even sewed up her little dress a little bit more, get herself all fancied up, and she went charting off to his job dressed up. I guess she was intending, you know, to go find her man and, you know, woo him on back to where whatever was going to happen. Whatever she had in her mind, it didn't play out exactly, but who knows? There's always five sides to the story, especially in this one. So while Amanda is looking for them, or looking for William, William and Effie are out on a date bar hopping, going from bar to bar over in the West Bottom. And in Health, what was also known as Health Half Acre. So they had gone bar hopping, and then Effie asked William to walk her home because he had to go to work. So he's on his way walking her home, and they're standing there, or they're walking, and then they get to a streetlight, and then they see Amanda, or Effie sees her first. And so she lets William know, and then Amanda rolls up on them, confronts them, and says to William, well, I expected to see you out here with, you know, your women. And again, they're a little inebriated. So Effie, you know, confronts Amanda like, you know, who are you? They have some words. And then Amanda pulls out a knife and she jabs Effie. So, of course, nobody expects that. So Effie staggers and then she runs down the alleyway. And William holds Amanda back and tells her to go on home. And I guess just either a little tipsy or just not believing what Amanda was capable of, she broke away from Amanda, and then she went chasing after Effie, and she caught up with her, chased her down this alleyway, jumped on top of her, and began to stab her multiple times, also to the point of almost disemboweling. She began to start to disembowel Effie. And a neighbor overheard Amanda saying, you know, I'll get you for trying to go with my man. And so William, you know, Effie is screaming for help. And William runs back to where they are. He finds them and he pulls Amanda off of Effie. And then they leave her in the middle of the street, stabbed and bleeding. And I guess for him, he's just trying to defuse the situation in whatever just silly way. What in the world? But Amanda then threatened William and told him that he better go to work and that he better not ever go back to her and that she would do the same thing to him if he went back to her. And so, like a punk, he went on home. Well, he went to work. And then she, let me not say punk, but I am being a little judgmental because the article's out now. But anyway, she, Amanda, went on. And I guess she just expected all of what was coming because she went back home, grabbed some clothes, then went and stayed at a friend's house. And so she went into hiding for at least a week, perhaps even 2 weeks. And then there was discrepancy in the record about how she ended up being arrested. She said she turned herself in, but she also was chased by the cops. I mean, they ransacked her house. She had planned to escape to Rosedale, Kansas, but somehow she decided to either turn herself in or either way to stay in Kansas City. And so she ended up going to jail. And just to sort of get even more deeper, because we still haven't even touched into the deeper aspects of the story. So Amanda, let's see, Effie dies within a week, but she had also named who her murderer was or who had stabbed her, and that was Amanda. And in fact, Effie's sister had come up from Kentucky, and it's just heartbreaking to see that all these people would see Effie, although she would live only a week longer, but to see her suffering that way and then to die a week later. And this is at the age of 19 that Effie was. And so Amanda would twice face execution as the result of the murder of another black woman. And what's interesting, sort of bringing it back to the beginning, everything I do, everything I say, everything, all has intention. So the song that was opened, it was a channeled song, if you will, but what was kind of being sung out was about missing my dad, because my dad had died. But what's interesting is that Amanda's father had died. And there's even argument that because of that, it's like the same year. She just sort of really went into this explosive rage. So inevitably, we have to sort of think about the family dynamics and then what our environment or what our connection or losses can do to ignite such moments of rage and fatal, you know, a fatal moment or a fatal encounter. But as a result of it, again, Amanda will twice face execution. And then these reformers, both black and white female reformers, would rally behind Amanda and really sort of craft the narrative that, you know, she was wayward and all these other notions about that all her mother died when she was an infant. They embellished a little bit more. But just that she needed direction. And if she was just a little bit younger, then we could have put her in a reformatory and we could have really helped her. So nonetheless, they made a deal with the state on her life. A deal was made. So that instead of hanging, she would face, not just face, but was expected to serve 50 years in prison. What is really interesting to the story is that it's not even just her case that did that. There was another case that happened almost that same weekend, and it all paralleled. But Amanda got 20 more years than a black man who killed another black man at a bar, and he got 30 years. He was supposed to have hung as well. But here it was, you had a man who was a black businessman, and so all of these businessmen were right on behalf of this black man. And so this deal, this double deal, was made with the state so that these reformers, they were aware that a deal was being made on a black male prisoner, and they also went to the state to, again, ask for a deal for her life, for Amanda's life. So, and the deal that was made with the state. So, again, we got to look at the state and its power. And this, because I really was arguing for this pyramid of power, this vast, hierarchical, omnipotent, you know, always present but not always seen power that is held by the state and the nation that really reinforces or reinscribes these ideas of what it means to be a citizen or citizenship, place, belonging, all of it. So Amanda then gets 50 years that she's expected to serve at the Missouri State Penitentiary, and she serves 10 years, and then she gets out. And she gets out, ironically, on the 4th of July, 1901. Talk about freedom. You asking me about freedom? Yeah, freedom in a whole new century for a formerly convicted murderer. What I'm saying. So, Amanda, being just ever evolving as she is and was, she got out of the prison essentially and got out at age 31. So, she remakes her life. She doesn't really go back to Sedalia, so we know, but it's a lot more to the story. What I do know is that by the time that I finished the article, I knew that she had gotten married, and then it's like that's sort of like the end of the story. I knew that she had died, and her name would still be invoked in other newspapers that were really trying to make this idea that she would have been the first person to be executed, which wasn't true. She would have fallen in line with a number of other black women who have been executed in the state. And so she marries the gardener to the richest white family in Warrensburg, where she lives, until when I developed a murder mystery tour with my students, and we went for 2 weeks going to every site, every archive connected with this case and with this murder, then we were able to uncover that, in fact, Amanda didn't just die like a married woman who was happy at all. In fact, it seemed like she kicked up some more stuff because she moved back to Sedalia several years later after marrying, again, this gardener. And according to him, she refused to have sex and had tried to burn down a part of the house where they lived. And so what had happened is that she moved back to Sedalia and kept posing as a different type of woman. One minute she posed as a single woman, then she posed as a widow. Then, you know, posed as just like a married woman waiting on her husband to come back from, you know, something else going on in the world. And then Amanda dies out of nowhere. So around roughly 1926, she disappears from the record. And so, yet, without her being married to this gardener, who died, he died in 1942. If she had gotten divorced from him, I'm sure that she would have disappeared even more. But nonetheless, because they were still married when she died, I was able to link and I was actually able to go find his grave. And that's also very revealing of class and death and sort of the investment in certain people than others, because I was never able to find her grave. I was never able to find Effie's grave. But, you know, sort of relying upon the various artifacts of history, I was still able to go to the site of the stabbing and essentially what would lead to Effie's murder. And so it's just coming full circle to think about, here it is that a murder victim, and this is not the first one that would find me, but this murder victim would find me, and then what would come as a result of being led to that. And so pretty exciting in Dr. Luther King's world, because you just kind of never know. I've uncovered so many, wow, unknown cases that are just sort of left in the annals of Black history, and many Black cold cases. And they're just unknown. But what happens when the murder victim shows up? Oh, yeah, what you going to do about them apples? So the future is bright, but there still remains these raceless ghosts and many people who are not talked about, because we privilege history. We privilege these conversations of murder and thinking about the supernatural, that it's all about a mansion. It's all about some big master, some so-called slave owner. And it's never really about if somebody was haunted in an apartment or if somebody was poor and they could see spirits and stuff. You know, we just believe that only the rich and the white are the ones who are capable. And that's because of a 20th century design, that a campaign that totally worked. But going back to it, what all of this does is bring together many worlds. So through this one article, please never reduce people in their articles, because articles are just as important as our books. That is exactly why I created this, because I had enough people sort of relegate me to, don't you just write articles? Oh, hold on now. What? Yes, articles matter, and they will always matter in this space. Where are we? We're over here in the article grove. Again, empowering us to know more. To know is to be empowered. And I'm empowering you on various aspects of the historical past, women's history, Black history, as well as carceral history, and thinking about where and how women or violence or these love triangles would produce something like this. So again, I'm the only Dr. Shawande Moose King in the world, so if you ever go look up to see what I've written or what I've thought about, you'll find plenty, and you will find about the Humble and Jackson case. So look it up. I provided the link for you so you can go read. You can go read it in the oldest Black history journal. Be empowered. Don't just read people's news feeds and sit up here and quote some stuff that is just totally not intellectual and non-scholarly. Come on, y'all. We need to go deeper. So we took you deep into the article grove today. Who knows what the next one will be about? I'm really excited about all this amazing information and these amazing scholars that you're going to get ready to interact with. So again, I am Dr. Shawande Moose King. Today we were hanging out. We were hanging out at the article grove, and we talked about the article, Armed with a Knife in Her Bosom, Gender, Violence, and the Carceral Consequences of Rage in the Late 19th Century. All right, I'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Bye-bye now.